Welcome to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees, a conversation for those who own, manage or protect intellectual property.
Hello and welcome to Green Shoots, the Appleyard Lees podcast. Today, we're going behind the data of a project that's close to our hearts. One of the most meaningful ways that we can combat climate change is through the rapid advancement of green technologies. And every year, Appleyard Lees publishes the only annual multi-sector patent analysis of green innovation produced by an IP law firm, revealing where progress is truly happening and where the gaps remain. It's called the Inside Green Innovation Progress Report, and this year marks an important milestone, which is the fifth edition. This episode, we're going to unpack how we build the report, the tools, the classification work, and the rigor that ensures our findings are credible and representative of today's global green innovation landscape. I'm your host, Kai Omain, and today I'm joined by Chris Mason, who ensures the rigor of our data gathering methodology. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Let's get started with a bit of an intro. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your role at Appleyard Lees and just some highlights of your involvement in the report over the years?
Yeah, certainly. So I'm a partner and patents attorney at Appleyard Lees. I've been at Appleyard Lees since I started in the profession nearly 15 years ago now. My practice is mainly in the chemical sectors, industrial chemistry, pharmaceuticals, healthcare, those kind of areas, and a wide range of technologies within that. I'm quite analytical by nature. I think a lot of us are in our professions. So a few things have aligned really to allow us to do this report.
I would add, actually, you mentioned that the nature of the work requires that many of our colleagues are analytical naturally. But I will add, just as a preface to this, that your reputation in particular for analyzing data is legendary in the office. So I'm very excited for the conversation we're about to have. But with that, we'll dive in. So I first wanted to start off by asking a couple of questions about the foundation of our analysis and our report, and that is patents. So in your view, why do you think patents give us a clearer picture of green technology progress than, say, media, whether that be social or traditional or press releases? Why is that a kind of good insight tool for us to leverage?
Yeah, I mean, as scientists at heart and lawyers by training, we have a personal preference to know what's real and to have a handle on what's real. And the patent data shows us that. And we think it's a really useful and strong indicator of meaningful technological progress. Not perfect, of course. You know, we have to be careful in how we handle the data and how we interpret it. It's not always a straight line between patent filing activity and meaningful technical innovation, but you know, we feel as though we've got the skill set that allows us to pick out the signals from the noise.
Yeah, I would just add to that I've not been with Appleyard Lees for nearly as long as Chris, and my background is in marketing. But in the time I've been here, having been able to review the four previous reports that have been published, I found it fascinating just to be able to differentiate between the companies that potentially shout the loudest, which is, you know, the communication that I might tend to see just by virtue of my role, and those that take action, which is what really comes out to me as a reader of the report and something that I've taken away. So a really fascinating insight tool.
I mean, we're very aware as well. It's a very complex area, but we made a decision very early on that we wanted our insights to be accessible. So we wanted to, you know, strip away that complexity. We wanted to do the hard yards on that and then present it in a way where it's easily digestible to a wide audience. That's always been our intention.
Absolutely. And yeah, as an enjoyer of it, mission success.
Good to hear. Thank you.
And next I wanted to check, what does it mean that Appleyard Lees is tracking this kind of data year after year? Obviously, I know that there are some technology areas that have repeated across a number of different reports. I wondered if there are trends that we can only see because of long-term data and a kind of value that comes out of that year after year reporting rather than a kind of one-off report where we look at a snapshot potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, isn't it? And it's interesting to talk about that. The obvious benefit is that the year after year data lets us see which green technology sectors are accelerating, peaking, you know, or maybe even slowing down over time. I genuinely look forward each year to seeing how the data for that new year will affect the trend. And another reason why we have plenty of insights I'm finding to share each year is due to the complexity of the technology. And there are so many different sub areas of each technology that we can dig into every year. For example, for hydrogen, over the years, we started with production. And then in subsequent years, we've turned focus to hydrogen storage and then use of hydrogen and fuel cells and then applications across different industries. And this year, well, I'm quite excited. We've taken the move for this sector into a bit of a downstream area, into the decarbonisation of key chemical industries, including the production of key chemical feedstocks like methanol and ammonia, which are seeking to incorporate this green hydrogen to reduce their carbon footprint. And we find that each of these sub areas reveal their own long-term historical trends, which can often be similar to the broader trend, but sometimes also interestingly different. And then, of course, once we've done that, that then provides a new foundation on which to track the year-on-year developments. So it's certainly keeping us on our toes. And then, of course, we can also cut the patent data itself into many different ways. We can zoom in on particular countries or particular companies to dig a bit further, maybe into more granular areas that way. So we're certainly not short of choice. I think, of course, you know, I was reflecting on this morning, thinking about this podcast. There are other benefits to us as a firm, really, and I'd say also probably, you know, to our clients. As we do each year's report, we increase our shared knowledge and know-how about how to research and analyze these sectors and the patent data and to put together the insights. Obviously, we hope that this is, you know, leading year on year to increasingly higher quality in terms of both the insights themselves and the way in which they are communicated. And then, I guess more broadly, the benefits of this in-house skill set that we are building here is useful not just for the report, but also I think we've got quite a large group of us now that are comfortable with creating these search strings to explore patent data. And that's, I'm finding, a really powerful tool for us to have. It often comes in useful when a client is looking for some cursory early insights in a particular technology area or maybe a particular competitor. You know, if they're on a call with me, I can often share my screen, as we can these days. They're very helpful. And we can do some initial investigations together. I find that often to be really efficient in terms of helping us to move towards a more properly informed position that allows us to get to better quality decisions more quickly. So yeah, there's the core benefits of producing this report, but then also we're finding this, you know, ripple benefits into our broader practice, which is really nice to see.
No, I love that. You've mentioned some of the ways that the reports have expanded in depth over the years. And again, I think that's just been fascinating for me to see. I think it'd be quite easy for more passive readers to think about green innovations being you kind of wind turbines or some of the more general technologies that as consumers, maybe we're more used to reading about in this space. But you mentioned the expansion of focus on methanol and ammonia. It was only in this most recent report and reading it that I realized how much of a contribution just producing those chemicals plays into widespread chemical manufacturing and like the footprint of manufacturing those specific chemicals has on the world's carbon emissions. So you kind of realize how many systems and layers there are to solving something like reducing the footprint that we have on carbon emissions around the world that I just think is fascinating when you kind of delve into and how these systems interlink. So
there's no one size fits all. Even within particular technology sectors, you know, you look at plastic recycling, which we've covered every year. And again, never short of things to look at there because there's such a myriad of different plastic types. And, you know, that necessarily leads to a wide range of recycling solutions that are necessary to, you know, achieve the full benefit of plastic recycling. If we want to get to a true circular economy and with a lot of those materials. And that's just, yeah, that's not a good thing, not a bad thing. It just is what it is. And it just means that there's an awful lot of space, innovation space to go at, and it has plenty of problems, of course, but you know, there's also lots of opportunity there and potential there, and it's, you know, fascinating to track those developments. And obviously we do a lot of polymer work ourselves, so you know, there are plenty of insights that we can't share because they're of a confidential nature. But from a personal perspective, I'm glad to hear that you find useful insights from it, from your marketing perspective and just general interest. And it's the same for me, you know. I genuinely enjoy producing this because it teaches me things as well as we go.
Agreed, yeah. I think at times it might feel overwhelming, the kind of scale of the challenge being solved. But I think what the report has given for me is, I always come away from it with a sense of optimism because you look at that complexity and you think, God, it feels like a mountain that you have to summit, you know, like how do you tackle something this complex and this many areas? And then through the filings, through the patent data, you realize how many people are involved in tackling this. And how many different approaches are being taken and large or small innovations that just have these cascading impacts on the systems that they operate in. So
it's funny you picked up on that because I don't think you've ever been to any of my presentations, have you, when I've talked about this report at various events and whatnot? No, and that's often somewhere where I start because I like it. And so, you know, I think it's a nice thought to put across to others as well. most of these areas that we look at, the trend, the filing trend is upwards, and often quite sharply upwards across not only, like you've said, a wide range of different technology areas, but also territories as well. And then it's even better, as you've touched on there, when you see that same global drive across a wide range of useful, you know, green technologies, which is what we see year on year. So I think the overall picture, if you take a high level view, is extremely positive in terms of the amount of investment that's going up in across this wide range of different technologies that we need to produce a more sustainable future for us all. So I think that's you know, a really nice message. And even in areas where we see drop off in filings, so one of the early areas we covered was solar, and that, you know, we saw a strong steady growth till about 2010, and then it was just a cliff edge drop to negligible numbers going into 2012, you know, and this was capturing, you know, I think what is quite widely known as the solar shakeout. And this goes into, really, you've got to put this data into context. You know, we're very careful about not just to overinterpret the data, and, you know, we try to carefully put it into context. And the context with that was, actually, that's not a bad thing. You know, I mean, it was a bad thing for some companies, but what it actually indicated was a mature technology. You know, the solar panels or photovoltaic cells that were ready. They were commercially viable. And, you know, the gains from high levels of additional innovation wasn't supported by the business case. So particularly out of China, where they're leading the world, I think, in producing these cells, they could be produced in a way that was a functional product at an appropriate cost point. So where we do see a drop in patent filing activity, we don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. You know, if you look at the context, sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it signals a mature technology. And actually, when we did dig into the solar data, we found that once you got a bit more granular and you stripped away the higher level of filings for the actual panels, there was a growth trend. There was a growth trend continuing to the present day, and that was more of the ancillary technology. So the mounts, the tracking technology, the optimization beyond the actual panels themselves, the ancillary technology, there was still a strong growth at lower numbers. But I thought that's a really interesting case study that I talk about quite a lot, that, you know, a drop-off in patent filing volume is not automatically a bad thing.
Love it. Fantastic. We've talked a little bit about the data that we're reviewing, but it feels like a great opportunity to talk about how we source that data and the kind of rigor behind that as well. Now, already mentioned your reputation as a bit of a data wizard around the office, so of course you play a significant role in this. I just wonder if you could tell us how the report data is gathered and how Apple Yardley's attorneys ensure accuracy and relevance of findings, whether that be search strategies or the classifications you mentioned. But yeah, how do we ensure that rigor?
Yeah, well, it's a big topic. I guess my starting point when I talk about this is that we're not doing this as a legal output, so we allow ourselves a bit more flexibility. And the main thing we focus on is validating the signal. So where do we start? Guiding light has always been, what is the chat about? What's in the headlines? What's the broadest thing that people seem to care about this year? Let's look at that and provide insights in that, because that's going to be interesting to people. So we take that as our starting point. And then once we have that kind of outline of technology areas, we then start to do a bit more deeper research. We also just dig into the data and see where the data leads us. So are there, you know, interesting narrative points that we can pull out of the data that people haven't been talking about broadly? And then, you know, as we build those narrative points, and it's an iterative process, you know, we reduce the noise, increase the validity of the signal. And obviously, because we're patent attorneys, we can flick through individual applications and publications extremely quickly and probably take quite an accurate view on the relevance of the disclosures from quite a quick look. So that's generally our process that we go through. And then once we're happy that we have validated the signals that we're going to be talking about and explored the interesting areas that we think are relevant for that year, then we start to flesh out the articles and then go through the editing process for the articles.
Obviously, the approach you described is logical, but I think it's certainly clear to me, and I'm sure to all of the listeners of this episode, there's a lot of skill involved in getting the final result that makes it to the page when people read the report. And I think a lot in that people can trust as well, a lot of validation that goes into that data to make sure that these are certainly not flippant insights that are found or kind of reported on, but detailed, in-depth research has gone into pulling the data that can inform these insights and thus make a quality report. So fantastic, brilliant answer. So where do you see green technology as accelerating the fastest across all the areas we've covered across the last 5 years? Are there any areas that stand out to you?
Yeah, great question. So I'll pick up my favorites. I'm pretty sure my electronic and engineering and colleagues will be annoyed at me for not covering their sectors appropriately. But one that is, I think, a little contentious is perhaps carbon capture. And the first time we did this report, it was picked up by the engineer, and their angle was that it was just a greenwashing technology being used by, you know, heavy industry to put forward a green face without really making much impact, perhaps. And we didn't agree with that view. Yeah, I mean, our view was that it was a more complex picture. One facet of the technology is its function as a transitionary technology for those kind of heavy industries where it's just not realistic to expect them to abandon their existing facilities in the near term. So what can carbon capture do to reduce the emissions from those facilities while more sustainable foundational technology matures, such as sustainable feedstocks and things like bioengineering? Another facet is those industries that will probably always produce these harmful emissions, such as cement production and the like. There will probably always be some industries that will need carbon capture technology just by their nature. And then, of course, it's not just about carbon dioxide. As we touch on in this year's report, we need to be capturing other gases too, such as methane. And then it's also not just about capturing these emissions to avoid harm to the environment. These emissions can actually become valuable feedstocks themselves, fed back into the industry as sustainable feedstocks. Then all the better for it. And, you know, indeed, since we covered carbon capture for the first time several years ago, we've seen very strong growth in new filings in that area and, you know, more and more commercial applications coming online. This year as well, I think we're seeing the strongest growth yet in carbon capture technology. So clearly industry sees it as, you know, a problem worth solving and economically worth solving as well. Because again, we're seeing this growth in this technology across not just one country or one company, but across many countries and across many different types of companies, which is, we see it as a good indicator. Another sector that is close to my heart is the alternative protein sector. We do quite a bit of work there, and whether we're talking about cultivated meat, which is growing meat in bioreactors from cells, or plant-based meat, which is obviously trying to take plant resources and turn them into meat-like products, or insect protein, which is...
Silent cheer over here.
Yeah, yeah. So it's always the most fun to talk about that, perhaps, just because of the initial reaction of the person you're talking to. But it's a genuine opportunity, I think, to reduce the environmental impact of our food production. There's an uck factor, I think, to get over for many, especially in the West, but you know, it promises many benefits, both environmentally and, you know, potentially nutritionally as well. So it's interesting to see those different areas progress. I think what I would say is that for plant-based meat, and in particular for cultivated meat, you know, these are quite new industries. And again, particularly for cultivated meat, there's a long innovation chain. You know, they're building off some, you know, regenerative muscle technology that existed, but there's still an awful lot of innovation required to not just produce a viable product, but to produce it economically. So it's been really exciting to see the use of new technologies like CRISPR with the genetic editing. You've got to genetically edit these cells to make them viable to produce these meat products. And then you've also got bioreactor innovation, food technology innovation. There's an awful lot for them to do, and it relies on a high level of reliable funding. And obviously the climate over the last few years has been a bit more challenging, I think, in that respect. So filings in that area are plateauing a bit at the moment, but I've really got my fingers crossed that that's an industry that can really get the momentum back on track in the near future, obviously. Another area I think I should mention, it's not an area I work in, but obviously my colleagues do, is nuclear. You know, we've added that in the last few years, and a few of my colleagues work closely with the UK Atomic Agency Authority and clients in the fusion space. And I suppose that's one of those, as more of a layman from that perspective, I'm really interested to see how that technology comes along. I mean, with the fusion technology, it's always been 20 years away, hasn't it, and whatnot. But I think there's this time it's potentially a bit closer, and we're seeing some really exciting things going on there. So, you know, I've really got my fingers crossed for my colleagues with working in that space.
Fantastic. I love that. I think in your answer, you mentioned the kind of global nature of some of the trends that are being picked up on in the report. I wonder if there are any regions or players that stood out to you as being giants in the space of green innovation.
I mean, I think the answer is, as a rule, no. And I think that's in some ways quite nice. You know, we don't often look at a area and find it's just one or two conglomerates absolutely dominating the space. There'll often be a cohort of the top filers that may be separated from the rest, but that cohort is often half a dozen strong at least. And then also, we can also track the number of new filers per year. And often you'll find that as innovation grows in a space, the number of new entrants in that space also grows. So, you know, we see a lot of competitive areas. It's rare that we see a single company dominating an area. I think another interesting thing that I always see, and we're seeing more of it year on year, is the impact of regulations and policy. Often when we see new surges coming from particular territories and we look into the context, it'll be quite closely linked with a new government regulation or policy. So there's certainly often correlation and probably a good amount of causation from the announcement of those policies and the reaction of industry and academia to respond to that.
Fantastic. And I think that's a great place to wrap up. So thank you, Chris, for sharing your perspective on the skill and rigor that goes into making the Inside Green Innovation Progress Report such a valuable resource for readers in all spaces. I've come away from this conversation excited to dive back into the report myself, and I've just read it. But if you haven't already, you can find the full fifth edition on our website, appleyardlees.com, and you'll find it featured on our homepage there. It is the only annual multi-sector patent analysis of green innovation published by an IP law firm, so I thoroughly recommend that any green innovation enthusiast check it out. And of course, we've only scratched the surface of the topics covered in this year's report. In our next episode, we'll be joined by some of the report's authors to explore their findings in more detail. But until then, thank you very much for listening and take care.
Thanks for listening to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees. If you have a question or issue you would like our IP specialist to discuss on the podcast, then email us at ip@appleyardlees.com.